Frederick Forsyth has packed an amazing amount of action into his life. At age 19, he became the youngest pilot in the Royal Air Force. After his military service, he turned to journalism, as it was a job that would enable him to keep traveling. After 3 years as a provincial reporter, he joined Reuters and spent the next 4 years in Europe. In 1965, Forsyth joined the BBC and was sent to Biafra to cover the war in Nigeria. What he saw of this brutal conflict made it difficult for him to toe the BBC's editorial line. He resigned, turned freelance, vanished into the thick of the conflict, and later emerged to publish the highly controversial The Biafra Story. In 1969, he decided to use his experience as a Reuters reporter in France as the basis for a thriller. Within 35 days, he'd completed The Day of the Jackal, a thrilling novel, an amazing movie. Forsyth has written 15 novels, including The Odessa File and The Dogs of War. While doing research for The Cobra, Forsyth arrived in the West African state of Guinea-Bissau on the very day the Army Chief of Staff was murdered, allegedly by the order of the president. That night, the president himself was bombed out of his residence, shot, and hacked to death. Unable to leave the country, Forsyth found himself back in the role of journalist, reporting on this coup for the British press. This is just one of the incredible adventures you'll find in Forsyth's new memoir, The Outsider, My Life in Intrigue.
Welcome, Frederick. It's an honor to have you with us on the book report.
Thank you.
You say early on in The Outsider that it's not an autobiography. Why did you set out to write a memoir and not an autobiography?
Well, I just thought I fended off a suggestion I do an autobiography for quite some time. I don't know. I thought, well, an autobiography is kind of lots of research, and it has to be pin accurate, and it has to be a kind of work of reference. And I don't want to do that. But I think it really came from friends around the dinner table. You know, when the wine has flowed and shooting the breeze and talking about things that happened and anecdotes. And I thought, that's the word. I'm going to write just about 50 anecdotes. They're not particularly linked to each other. They're just things that happen. Hence the word memoir, which is obviously what you remember. So that's what it is. It's just a collection of 50 anecdotes of things I remember. The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Well, as a youth, you spent summers in France, Germany, and Spain to learn the languages. Does one experience there in those years stand out more fondly than the others?
In Spain, I was down in Spain actually, supposedly on a scholastic course of 160 lectures in Spanish. But I only went to the first of the 160s. I skipped the middle 158 because I was fascinated by bullfighting. I wanted to spend the time in the bullring. So that I duly did. And I was no good at it, of course, but nevertheless, it was fun.
In your career as a journalist and after, you've met many men and women who impacted the course of history. Will you share a meeting with one of the legends?
Yeah, well, I mean, I met some profoundly impressive people. I mean, one I always remember was going to Israel, my first ever time to Israel. I'm not Jewish, but I found it a fascinating country. And I was offered 20 minutes in the presence of David Ben-Gurion, virtually the founder and first premier of Israel. But in fact, when we got together, he gave me 3 hours of his time. And this guy was living history. I mean, he'd met them all. He'd met de Gaulle, Eisenhower, he'd been one of the leaders, first of all, of the Israeli independent movement, and then prime minister. So he was fascinating. De Gaulle was fascinating. Various people in high political places. You say, well, I met him. I was never really a confidant of them, but they were interesting people to meet, particularly as I was a very young man, and they were people who had changed the world.
What was it like to be in Berlin on the day Kennedy was assassinated?
Well, that was pretty weird because I think, you know, there is a saying, everyone remembers what they were doing that night, and if they were alive, obviously a long, long time ago. But I was actually dining in West Berlin with a very pretty girl, and suddenly the Muzak on the loudspeaker cut out, and a voice in German said, President Kennedy has been shot. It was 9 p.m. over there, 2 p.m. I think in Dallas, 9 in Berlin, and there was all hell let loose. I mean, women screamed. I mean, he'd been there the previous summer, so standing on the wall saying, or looking at the wall saying, you know, Ich bin ein Berliner. And so they adored him. And I remember the women screaming and tables being overturned and men cursing. And I realized I had to get back to my post in East Berlin. So I got into my car and I motored through Checkpoint Charlie. The guards, who are hard as nails, they were pretty prepared to shoot down a kid or a student trying to clamber over the wall to get out. But this time they were frightened. They were really frightened. They thought maybe war is coming.
Yeah.
So I had to assure them that without any knowledge at all, the war was not coming. Please let me through. So they let me through. Right? Didn't even examine the car. Just because they were just all running around in like headless chickens. It was quite a night.
We're speaking with Frederick Forsyth on the Book Report.
Can you share how the Biafran conflict was the end of your BBC career and your condemnation of the Harold Wilson government?
Yeah, that was 1967. I left Reuters and I joined the BBC, and it was just after the Six-Day War, so all the foreign correspondents were in the Middle East. And the head came around the door, and someone said, "Would you go down to Africa?" I said, "I don't do Africa. I do Europe." No, go down to Africa. There's a very, very short-lived little war down there, and we need to cover the rebel side. So we got a guy in Lagos, but we need a guy on the other side. Hey, you'll be back in 2 weeks. Okay. And it was all rubbish, of course. I was given a briefing that turned out to be complete garbage. It came from the British ambassador, who didn't know what the hell he was talking about. And I took a different view. I got down there and I looked at the situation. I said, this is not going to be a 2-3 week war. This is going to be big and bloody. And so I said so, and I was told, no, you're biased, you're biased. I said, I'm not biased, I'm just telling you what I saw. No, the ambassador must be right. I said, why must the ambassador be right? Because he's the ambassador. So I said, well, I don't care. He was 400 miles away from the fighting. I was in the middle of it, and it's not going to be a 2 week war. So 2.5 years later, after I'd left the BBC in disgust and gone back as a freelance into the rainforest, the war did come to an end. But the International Committee of the Red Cross said they thought about 1 million children had died. So that was a traumatizing experience to see it,
yes.
See kids dying all around you.
So what made you begin writing novels?
Yeah, necessity, basically. I got back from Biafra. I was back in England. I was broke, and I had debts and no salary, no income, no job, no prospect of a job, probably. So I thought, stupidly, perhaps, you know, hey, I'll make some money writing a novel. That's about the slowest way and the most uncertain way to make any money. Rob a bank if you want, but don't write a novel. So it's about 100 to 1 it'll never get published anyway, and about 1,000 to 1 it'll sell a lot of copies. But I didn't know that. So maybe this is some kind of guardian angel for the truly naive in life. But I sat down and I wrote a story I'd worked out when I was a Reuters man in Paris 7 years earlier, which was how to kill Charles de Gaulle. Bring in an outsider, a guy whose face isn't known to the police, who's got no name, and they've never heard of him, but he's got a scope side rifle. Maybe he could get through the rings of security around Charles de Gaulle. So I wrote it in, I think, 35 days, writing day and night, practically, and hawked it around, and eventually publisher number 5 took it. And the rest, as they say, is history, because it just went and went and went. I didn't know that. He didn't know it even. He published, I think, 5,000 copies. Last, I think, known 10 million. So it changed my life, obviously, because suddenly I could. He signed me up to 2 more novels. They became Odessa File and Dogs of War. And then I, willy-nilly, I had to change jobs. I was no longer a foreign correspondent. I could sit at home and write novels for a rather larger salary.
Well, I know you feel strongly about the need to visit a country if you're going to write about it. Can you share a story of one of your close calls while on location?
Well, yeah, probably the last one. I mean, it was two and a half years ago, and I'd written a book called The Kill List, which The Kill List actually is not fiction. It's in the White House. It's the list of all the top terrorists in the world whom the USA intends to whack, if it can, and it usually does. And so I thought, well, I've done Washington, I've done Fort Bragg, I've done this, that, and the other, I've done the various places in the West that I need, but there's one place I still need to go, because I cannot get factual information about it, and that's Mogadishu, capital of Somalia, and supposedly the murder capital of the world. So I said, I have to go there. I can't invent it, I can't find any authoritative descriptions of it. I have to go and see it for myself. Mm-hmm. So my wife sort of put her foot down and said, okay, but you know, you're going in with a bodyguard. So for the first time ever, I went in with a bodyguard, and a good guy, an ex-Special Forces guy, Irishman, and he kept me alive. We went in, we moseyed around for 2 days, 2.5 days, and we came back out again. So, mm-hmm. But that was weird. Guinea-Bissau was weird. I've been a few places where I thought, when I was in, what the hell did I come here for?
Yeah.
But luck hell, I came back out again.
Well, lucky for us. Any final thoughts about The Outsider?
No, I think it's done, and I'm not going to write a second Outsider. So it is the swan song. I've decided at the ripe old age of 77, that's me. I'm finished. I don't have anything more to say. I don't need to say any more. And so I'm going to retire. And so no more novels and no more autobiographies. I want to do what old guys are supposed to do, which is walk the dogs and play with the grandkids.
All right. Well, Frederick, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. The book was fabulous. I read it in 2 days. It was that good.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much.
I'll do that. Bye now.
Bye. Bye.